Welcome to The Stories We Don't Tell, a podcast about storytelling. We are your hosts, Stefan
and Paul.
Today, we will be talking about using humor to address taboo topics and the ways that a story could change depending on when you are telling it in your life. But first, we have a story told by our very own Paul Doerr.
So, does anybody like doing things on their own? Just like going to things, doing things. That's good. That's good. Then this will go a little bit better. You'll see why, but I think if, because I'm not going to ask for hands, but I think if there might be some people that even came here tonight on their own. And this story is dedicated to you. So a few months ago, I told a fun story about dying. And there was a line in that story that kind of stuck with me, and it kept sort of rattling around in my head. So I've unpacked that idea, which is, the world is not built for single people.
Preach.
It's in two parts and one-act play. So part one, vacations. I am happy being on my own. Despite what people might think, I do like myself. I'm good company when I'm in the mood. Some people get energized by being around others, but I recharge alone. So a few years ago, I went through a pretty rough breakup, and I wanted to get away right away, so I fled to an all-inclusive resort in Cuba. I ate alone, I got some sun, I swam in the ocean. Everyone left me alone. It was exactly what I needed. Until the last day, we took a bus back to the airport. The bus was full, except for the seat next to me, which was over the back wheels and so a bit higher than the rest of the seats. At the last minute, one more couple got on the bus, and the driver, who had a microphone, said over the loudspeaker, you, sir, sitting alone. Me? And he said, yes, you with the empty seat beside you. To which, like weirdly, the way this is set up right now, like an ocean wave starting from the front of the bus, everyone poked their heads up and turned around to look at me. And the driver continued, could you please come to the front and sit with me so this lovely couple can sit together? So I walked to the front, and for some reason, everyone started clapping for me. Thank you. And I sat up front by the driver like I was a child who was in trouble. So whether it is at the movies or on trains, planes, or buses, couples cannot be separated, even at the cost of the dignity of one single person. Because going on vacation is not built for single people. Part two. Eating alone. I have restaurants that are very single friendly that I feel comfortable going to alone. I never go at peak hours, so sometimes I eat lunch at like 2:30 because I hate taking up an entire table for one paying customer. One of my favorite places is in Kensington. There's lots of seating. I know the times when it's empty. The servers barely acknowledge you. They bring your bill with your food, and you pay at the front when you're done. It's seamless with limited amounts of contact. And then I found Yunnan Noodle Shack. Full disclosure, I am not getting paid in any way to promote this restaurant. But the fact that this place exists has completely changed my dining experience. It is a restaurant. I'm sorry, I still can't get over this. It's very makes me very happy. It is a restaurant that specifically caters to people who want to eat alone. I walked in. There's no judgment. The host led me down an aisle of a series of tastefully designed tiny cubicles, showing me to my very own. There was a drawer so you could put your stuff and your bag in there. The menu was available scanning a QR code. You order through your phone, it goes directly to the kitchen. There's buttons all over the place for drink refills, requesting the bill, and any other assistance. On my table, there's the Wi-Fi password, a small holder for a book. It was so I could eat with two. I'm just very excited, even just thinking about this. So my food came and I took my time. I really enjoyed it. I didn't feel like I had to rush out of there or that I was taking up a table. And when I was done, I pushed the button for my bill and someone appeared with it. And that was it. And on my way out, two people came in and they wanted to sit together. Oh, I scoffed at them. Because except for Yunnan Noodle Shack, restaurants are not built for single people. The one-act play. So I went to a friend's comedy show. Yes, I also go to things like comedy shows alone. The show was being held at the Paradise Theater. And I got there early, as I always do. And when the doors opened, I picked, as I always do, what I call a low-friction seat. Meaning, it's not a bad seat, but not a good one either. Perhaps it's off to the side, or for a movie a little closer to the front, or for a comedy show closer to the back. So the seats kept filling up around me. A group of 10 came down my row. I stood up to let them by until they stopped running out of room. So I'm standing, and there's a woman to my left and a man to my right, and they start this little performance just for me. She's counting sort of to herself, but really also to me, and really exaggerating, like one, two, three, we need 9 seats, we're looking for 10. If we just had one more seat. And then the man chimes in, only 9, huh? And they both look around pensively. I couldn't let this excruciating performance go on any longer. And I grabbed my coat and said politely, you can have my seat. And they both started laying it on real thick. Oh, wow, we didn't mean for you to move. That's awfully kind of you. And so I found another low friction seat and enjoyed the rest of the show. But I'd like to rewind this a little bit because I've written a little play of my own, a reimagining, if you will, of what I think those two people were actually saying. But I need some help. I need 2 volunteers from the audience. Now, the only stipulation is that you have to want to be very mean to me. So you'll be mean person. Okay. Okay. Hi. Thank you. You're gonna be rude person. Okay. And I'm gonna be Paul.
Is this? Do you want to be between us? Or?
I think that would be best. Yeah. Let's do that. And Martha is gonna be the narrator. Okay. So you're all good. You've got. Yeah, you're good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. The lights come up to find an audience gathering inside a theater. The show that the audience is there to see is a live comedic performance by Elvira Kurt. There is excitement in the air, that usual pre-show energy that is equal parts nervous, apprehensive, and wary. The spotlight focuses on Paul, a mid-40s man sitting alone in a low-friction seat.
There are only 9 seats here, and there is 10 of us.
This would be great, except for the loser that's sitting by himself.
Let's pretend like we're confused and looking for alternatives.
Maybe this idiot will get the hint and take a hike.
Yeah, and go be a sad sack loser person somewhere else.
Mean person and rude person pretend to look around.
Why do people come to things alone? Doesn't he have any friends? A partner? There's no one else in this entire theater by themselves. Just this loner who's preventing us from all sitting together and thus robbing us of our good time.
He is robbing us! Thief! Thief!
I can sit somewhere else, don't worry.
Yes, that would be great. You, as a single, loner person, are really bringing me down.
Me, too. And he will move because he's a pathetic loser. But first, we have to pretend that we don't actually want him to move, when in reality, that's exactly what we want him to do.
And expect him to do. Because you're right, he is a pathetic loser.
Mean person and rude person speak to Paul really sarcastically and laying it on real thick.
Oh, wow!
That's so kind of you!
Do you think he bought it?
Of course he did! He's a loser!
I'm just gonna go sit somewhere else.
And rude person call after him repeatedly. Again, sarcastic and disingenuous.
Oh, don't go! We don't want you to move!
But they really mean,
ha-ha, sucker!
Because going to shows is not for single people.
And see.
Thank you.
I mean, talking about first takes, it's kind of neat to be back, you know, our first episode back.
Yeah, it's our first take back. Here we are.
Yeah.
We hope the 2,200 of you have rejoined us for this exciting episode featuring our very own Paul Doerr, which you just heard. So, Paul, I have a question for you. You've done a number of these kinds of stories that sort of take a thing that we don't talk about. A story we don't tell, perhaps, if you will give me that.
Yeah.
And found a way to tell it and to bring it to life in a humorous way. This story we just heard, you know, is again about sort of the trials and tribulations of living alone and the ways that our society does not make space for that. And, you know, we are in a loneliness epidemic that has been shown by the Toronto Foundation's vital signs here in the city of Toronto, where we are recording from, has said like 50% of people identify as feeling lonely. And so it's obviously a topic people struggle with a lot, but it again also comes with a level of taboo-ness in that we don't talk about the idea. It's very rare to have someone just admit outwardly that they are lonely. And that's not exactly what the story's about, but the concept, I think, overall remains one that we don't talk about too often, the difficulty that the ways our society is not built, you know, for this. And you tackle that in an interesting way. So how did you think about it before you, you know, tried to write it?
A big part of it comes from just, experiencing these things.
Right.
But there's always something that kind of happens where in the story, I talk about this restaurant that I went to. And when I was reading about the restaurant, because like it was a big deal, it got a lot of press when it opened because they're like, oh, there's this restaurant where it's designed where you know, you're eating alone. And when I read a little bit more about it and the people that sort of the owners of the restaurant, their sort of concept of it, of that, oh, they were traveling in Japan, and in Japan, it's very normalized that like people, there's places set up, there's always places, like it's very part of just like society and it's okay. And there's none of this issue. And it, I guess that sort of first got me going on that idea of like, oh, that's interesting. And also seeing all this press and being like, why is this a big deal? Because then there's like people, because I know there's people like myself that you're like, well, you have to do stuff.
Right.
Like you can't, you can't not do things. And I think, unfortunately, with all the stuff that you mentioned that there is, I've read about this in other large cities as well, where there's like a loneliness epidemic kind of thing. I think, unfortunately, part of it is because we don't talk about it.
Right.
You know, as these things do, and you're a storyteller and a writer as well. And so you kind of have these ideas knocking around in your head. And then in this sort of particular kind of case, you, as a writer and a storyteller, you're also very aware of things that are happening around you. Mm-hmm. You're very self-aware when you're in certain experiences. So when, as you sort of do, you kind of collect these, when you have enough of these kind of weird, awkward experiences, then you go, oh, okay, I've got a number of pieces here. Mm-hmm. I think there's a puzzle that we can like put together with this.
Yeah. It's interesting that there is that spark, you know, and so often that's true. Like often we talk about the idea of finding a moment or this specific moment of a story that makes you want to talk around it, or, you know, sort of explore more about it. But there's also these other things of a story or something else that sort of brings a new question into your brain, right? Like, I think what's interesting about this is that the moment a store opens that's designed for a person to come alone, your original question is, oh, I didn't even think that could be a thing. Mm-hmm. Because it's so much not normalized in this culture. And then why isn't it? Mm-hmm. Right. And that can bring all these other experiences into contrast to this sort of different world that could exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a lot of space to start playing around with, right? Mm-hmm. Like once you have that question of why is the world not designed this way? And here are a bunch of examples that I have from my life that I just cast back on it. And then you know where you're going, which is like, here's this new world that we could live in,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we are living in a place that has this space for it. But what's interesting is you didn't use that as your climax.
Mm-hmm.
So often, if you are doing this kind of writing, the spark moment is your climax moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Is the peak of the story. Whereas in actuality, for this story, you decided to actually go through that piece and then come to this other moment where you are, you know, being, I would say, lambasted in your brain and their brains, which you sort of use as your sort of ending point, which is interesting to me.
And you know what's funny is that I have a bit of, what would you call it, writer's, storyteller's remorse about how that ended in a way, because I think I missed a beat on it.
Oh, interesting.
When I was working on that, I thought that part of the joke was that, thinking of getting other people involved and then like sort of writing these things, having these things said to me about me was funny because I hope that, and this is kind of what we could talk about later as well, about, you know, telling a story like this at a different point, mm-hmm. perhaps in your life. I feel like my goal was to set up in the first two stories enough of like, hey, I do these things alone, but I'm like, okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think this is kind of funny that other people are acting weird and these weird things happen, but I'm comfortable with this.
Right.
And so I hoped that I would have earned that, like, no, this is the joke, is that I don't actually think these things, but this is sort of what, how my brain has processed this, maybe when I was younger or something, and, mm. and this is where I had to kind of get to. My storyteller's remorse is what I spent the next day going over and over in my own head was that I should have done a, you know, like you see in a movie, a big speech or something like that to rally the troops. I should have said, I wished I had sort of said, no, I will not go anywhere because this was in my own brain and I should have been the person that stood up and said, no, this will not stand.
Right.
But I didn't get there. I didn't have enough time. I needed another day.
Fair. I mean, that's a great idea, and it really would have landed, and also for the theme, it would have yeah. worked great. But maybe you have to record that now and just add it in.
Right.
But let's. I know that we want to end
wrap
the show
up,
soon,
yes.
But we do want to talk a little bit about the fact that, you know, before we hopped on the mics, we were talking about how differently this kind of story might land. You know, if you were telling it, say, earlier in your life, or the fact that you feel like you have. Gained the confidence to feel comfortable sort of telling the story in this way and that the audience will then receive it as that they believe you, right? Like, I think that's you've earned that belief in some way.
Well, this is a bit of a spoiler for one of our next, or maybe our next first episode.
Right.
When we talk about guest hosts or guest producers and so on, but I was talking with one of our future guest producers, and we kind of got on this interesting conversation about how you, over time, you change the way that what is important to you and important to your life and the kind of things you want to talk about. And something that, with me, I think when we were sort of starting out, you want to tell the truth. You want to tell, oh, I'm going to be honest, which is fine. You know, you're going to really just be, you know, real up there and all that kind of stuff. But then over there, I've just get to some points where I really do. And this was one of those cases where I wouldn't say it's necessarily totally silly, but I wanted to just tell a story that was fun and that would maybe connect with some people that were also like literally at our event alone that came up and talked to me afterwards and enjoyed it. And just who, that it's, you just want to be, sometimes I just find that the stuff I was doing, if I told the story in a different time in my life, it might've been more serious. It might've been more like sad almost
kind of
thing.
Totally.
And
like mad even, you know, instead of sort of coming across as the society's like this, it's like, no, society's like this and I hate it.
Yeah. And like you, it was interesting because something that you had mentioned off mic was, that also I think with age, it there's a certain, I don't want to say confidence, but like it's there's something built in that it's like, no, it's all good. I'm right. Like comfortable with all of this.
I was going to go with comfort, honestly. That was the word. Instead of confidence, comfort with the way things are. Yeah.
Yeah. But I appreciate everybody listening and, you know, I'm solidarity for people that are going out there, living their lives all alone. It's great. And I want to thank Paul for sharing his story. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Paul.
We want to thank the storytellers for sharing these intimate pieces of their lives, the event hosts who welcome us into their homes, and the audiences who come to our shows and listen to this podcast. The podcast is produced by Yasmin Mansouri. Music was composed by Arlene Pakulin. And for more information on the podcast, the book, event, or to join our mailing list, please visit storieswedonttell.org.
This episode of Stories We Don't Tell podcast is brought to you by that restaurant Paul mentioned. That restaurant Paul mentioned, where being alone is cool.